What are we doing?
We're just choosing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell everyone.
Cheers.
Welcome to Eat, Drink, Sleep, Repeat, a podcast by Allison Ramirez and me, Omar Lewis. This is season 2, episode 8.
Coming up on today's episode, we chat with Dean Alam, a seasoned adventurer, cultural enthusiast, and founder of Guided Seeker, a bespoke travel company that offers a personal, compassionate approach to travel.
These journeys are meticulously planned to guide adventurers into the unknown, where they can discover the sacred answers they seek about the world and their purpose in it. Born in the Philippines and raised in different parts of the world, including Japan, she's also visited numerous countries. Dee has perfected the art of finding hidden beauty in places that most people might overlook.
She's based in Los Angeles, California, and we're excited to hear her insights on travel and culture on today's episode. Welcome to the show, Dee. Tell us about yourself, your name, who you are, what you do.
So I recently moved to LA right at the start of COVID because, as we all know, traveling just was like, brr. And It was just sort of a coincidental situation because my partner and I had recently got an apartment here because we had been traveling back and forth. My partner is an acupuncturist, and so she already had such an immense group of patients here. So she would travel back and forth to California with her practice, and you know, I was starting to build my clients here in LA, and. Yeah, so we got a little apartment so that, you know, we could travel to while we were working here. And, you know, then all of a sudden, COVID. And, you know, we were faced with the decision of being in Atlanta versus being in LA. And ultimately, we had to move to LA in order for us to stay afloat with life and work. And then that gave me the opportunity to sort of connect with the LA community. I've been here since.
So it sounds like you and I kind of switched places. I was in LA for years, and then I'm from Miami. I spent a year in Miami between LA and Atlanta, but I moved to Atlanta in mid 2020.
Wow.
But I think you're in a great place for what you do. Had you started Guided Seeker when you were in Atlanta, or is this business something that you started when you moved to California?
So I started Guided Seeker in 2017. At the end of 2017, I had my first trip in 2017. And, you know, yeah, I mean, LA is a great place for what I'm doing. I found it, you know, it's difficult because when you're talking about a certain idea of care or a different way of traveling without it being like a completely a spiritual journey, you know, there's a lot of misconception about what I do. I think that especially in Atlanta, where it's like, you know, it takes some explaining, you know, that it's not like, oh guys, you know, we're going to be, you know, sitting at a ashram and which is all fine, but you know, people just think, you know, from hearing my name, Guided Seeker, that it's super spiritual. It isn't not spiritual, but it's definitely laid back, because I feel like you can find spirituality in so many things and so many moments. You don't have to go to a temple and find spirituality that way. I mean, you can be having a cerveza, watching a sunset, you know, on a beach with having a really amazing conversation with a local person that you've just met, and you realize that you have much more in common than you think. I think those moments are spiritual ones. So, you know, coming to LA, where it's like, you know, the land of all possibility and different ways of communicating, and just this more creative, feeling to it, this kind of easier movement. I think that people don't have to question exactly. They kind of get it without having to over explain it.
Atlanta's growing and changing, but it's definitely still a few years behind LA when it comes to a lot of this stuff.
I mean, it's, you know, every place has its magic, right? So Atlanta, you know, I love the slowness of it. You know, I mean, definitely the earth. I mean, it's clay, you know, it's sort of like it's kind of hearty, and the people that I love dearly there are just very grounded, earthy people, you know, that I think they have their misconceptions about LA being just like flagrantly like and airy and, you know, disconnected. And I think there's a misconceptions about every place, but Atlanta, I hold a very dear place in my heart because it's where I grew into sort of this, through my adolescence, you know, sort of shook off childhood and grew into an adult. And so I hold that place. It has cradled me very sweetly. But yeah, Atlanta's behind in certain ways, but also ahead in certain ways, you know, just like LA is behind in certain ways and ahead in certain ways. But yeah, I do understand what you're saying. And yeah, I do think that Atlanta has come a long way and it's growing really quickly.
So how did you come up with the idea for Guided Seeker in the first place? And what was your original thoughts when you created it?
Wow. That is a really long story because it started from a wee little lass that I was. I'm just kidding. basically, I was traveling. I was living in Central America at the time and traveling. I lived in Central America for 2 years. So I say travel lived because I really thought I was going to just end up there. I had sold all my things. You know, I worked like three jobs and I was really busting to make a new life for myself. And I thought, what a great life to be an adventurer. I've always sort of carried my home on my back. And, you know, I've met a lot of amazing people through just the small little trips that I had taken. And also sort of like, because I had been traveling all my life, you know, with my family. And I decided, okay, I need a big change before I get stuck in a certain place. I was in my 20s and I just thought, okay, I need to go. And I picked Central America because it was close and because I kind of fall in love with that place. And, you know, everybody goes to Europe, you know, everybody has this, like, they go to Asia. And I just thought, nah, I'm just gonna be close and also just do something that a lot of people that I know weren't really doing. And so while I was traveling, you know, there's different phases that happen when you know, you go on a trip and you know you're going on a longer trip, you know, so there's different, you start to understand that I'm not just traveling anymore. I'm like having a life here. And so I need to get and understand the rhythm of where I'm at and understand there's like rhythms and also freight phases of travel. So the first 3 months that I was in Central America, of course, I was like, you know, and you know, I was just having fun. I was just like doing everything. And, you know, at three months, I was like, dang, I just started getting exhausted. You know, it's like, it hits you. Like you start to kind of feel, you know, the flavors of being a little homesick, of not getting what you need, of being misunderstood. Certain things are going wrong. You're missing the buses. You're just getting them things. And you're like, what am I doing? You know, and you're asking, you know, I was asking myself that question, like, what am I doing? You know, this is a lot harder than I anticipated. I mean, hardness in the way of just comfort, you know, you're traveling from place to place. And
where in Central America were you? Sorry, I think I missed it.
Oh, no. I started in Mexico City. So Mexico City, and then I went to the Yucatan, and then I went to the West Side, and I went to the very South, and I spent some time in San Cristobal de las Casas. I worked on a farm in Ekbalam and the Yucatan. And then I just made myself my way all the way down to Panama. And then I went all the way back up. And, you know, for the most part, I spent time in Guatemala. So in this place called San Marcos de la Laguna and then San Cristobal de las Casas, and then also in Nicaragua on this island, on this town called Balgue, on the island of Isla de Ometepe. So you know, after 3 months, I started to see and started to be a part of the environment a little bit more. And I started working on these permaculture farms and sort of trying to give myself a schedule of what I was doing or an idea of what I wanted to accomplish. And of course, the beginning of the trip, I thought this is what I was going to be doing. I thought I was going to be a scuba diving instructor on an island, and I would take photographs because I'm a photographer as well. So I just had this whole like different idea of what my life was going to look like. And then I started farming and I started working and working with the indigenous people that I was around, and learning about Latin America as a political movement, and how, you know, in America, how we refer or what we think of Latin America, and how we very much, you know, the United States has influenced policy there. And I mean, I had so many different experiences. And part of it, a major part of it, was working on these organic farms, these permaculture farms, and really understanding the land and understanding the people. And as I saw people as tourists coming in and blazing and taking their photo here and taking their photo there, I started realizing that, what experiences are these people having? And I started questioning my own experience and what I wanted in my life, and who was I in all of this, you know? And, you know, when I came back to the States, reluctantly came back to the States, to try to piece together what I wanted my life to be, with the experiences that I had in Central America. You know, a lot of people were like, "Oh, how did you travel? How did you do this? You go on all these trips. Oh my God, you must be so wealthy. Are you independently rich?" And I just laughed because, I thought, yeah, I've always found a way, you know, to travel, and I've always made that a priority. And I think I just started helping, you know, helping friends, like go on trips, or a lot of people were like, "Let me travel with you. Let's do that. You know, you should do something like this." And so, yeah, I thought, okay, maybe this is something that I really want to get into. And I just was moved by really introducing people to the people that I've met on my trip, sort of like the corners, like the, not the representative, but like the people who make the place. When I thought about what kind of trips that I wanted to offer, and how I wanted them to look like, and also what is this travel industry and what are they doing, and why does it continue to sort of like turn out this kind of traveling that isn't really feeling anything, you know? It really isn't integrating or feeling or the purpose or the a basic idea of like connecting with the places that people go. I wanted to change that. I wanted to try to offer something different. So taking everything in consideration, you know, taking even the idea of like how guides are treated and what makes a good trip happen, I wanted to put it all together, because I think that it's a whole system, you know, just like anything else. It's this whole ecosystem of things. And how can I respect the place that we're going, you know, that we visit? How can we do this in a respectful way without sitting here calling myself like I'm an eco-friendly company? You know, I hate the labels, you know, I've always hated the labeling. I just wanted to do what I think was what I believe to be right, you know, and I think that if we all really searched inside of ourselves, I think we could probably find ways to do the same. You know, we know what's right. You know, we know how to think about all the pieces. And so, yeah, I put together Guided Seeker and decided to be able to offer trips that were thought of with everything that I thought was important to have a good trip. I thought about the movement also of an individual and what is it like to be a person traveling and what allows me to feel the places that I'm at.
So really like mindful travel, right?
Yeah, to put it that way. Yes, mindful travel.
You mentioned something a few minutes ago. You said, I think, permaculture.
Mm-hmm.
Is that similar to agro-tourism?
Permaculture is just a type of how you set up a farm. So it's like, so if I plant something, I have whatever I plant next to it. And it's in consideration of everything is just working as a whole system. So not one thing is placed somewhere without having being thought about how it's affecting everything else, you know? So that's permaculture. It's like permaculture also works with animals. It's like this animal, the chickens are going to move the soil, and that's going to help, you know, break down and compost things. I mean, it's just thinking about everything in play. And that definitely has influenced the way that I wanted to put together my company as well. Just thinking about how everything affects everything, as it does, regardless if you do it consciously or not.
So your trips, where did you start and how have you expanded now? And tell me about those details that you infuse in your trips to make sure that that personal connection is made. I'm sure that involves, like you mentioned, tapping into people who are local, who have boots on the ground and real connections to those places. But tell me about it specifically, like where we're going, what we're doing, and how you've kind of expanded since you first started.
Yeah, so basically in the beginning, I wanted to put together these group trips. I thought they'd be easier. I already had friends that have were all over the world and were already guides. And so I connected with most of them. I connected with certain ones that I feel like we could put together an awesome trip. And so we came together and put together an incredible trip to Bali. Specifically, my first trip was with my French friend Jay. He's amazing. He's traveled all over the world, and he is also an artist and a performer. But he would host these things called the Pirates Retreat. So he has ton of experience working with people. But anyway, we decided to put together this incredible Bali trip, and it was like sort of his favorite places, like his mama, his like Balinese mama, that we would have dinners with, and the places that he fell in love with really moved him. So on that aspect, that's how we curated our trips. As far as making it personalized for an individual, how Guided Seeker does it is that, I interview every person that goes on the trip. And I have an understanding of, what's going on, where they are in their life right now, and what things really move them, what kind of trips they've already taken, sort of what do they expect out of travel? How do they see, what do they want from this experience? I think it's just about asking the right questions to your clients, and really hearing them out, so that you can find a place that you think will meet them and introduce them to the people that you think that they will get along with. I put on these trips, these open group trips that way. But a lot of the trips that I do are private trips. So if, say, you wanted to go on a trip, just you yourself, it's fine. I would be able to help you with that. Or if you wanted to go with your friends or your family, then I would put together, and every person on the in your group would be interviewed. I mean, I even speak to the kids because I want everybody to get something out of it, and I want to know where you can meet in the middle, between the people in your group. A lot of times people put these group trips together, and it's like, especially with, I have had this, groups of friends, and you don't really know. It's like you don't really know someone until you travel with them. So I kind of go in there and get to know the people that you're traveling with, so I know how to mix it up. And that way there's no like inner resentment between the trip, and I handle the itinerary, the money, you know what I mean? So it's like it's different than having one person having to put all the energy and the time, and it's copacetic. You know what I mean? I just make things really easy for people. And so I get a basic idea of where they want to go. Sometimes people don't know where they want to go, they just want to go somewhere. We operate all over the world. Even if it's a place that I haven't been, I have friends that have been, and I know who to connect to, or I just take the time to actually connect to the people that I'm speaking to. And I do a lot of research. So I always make sure that if I'm not personally going on the trip, and if I'm just making a group trip itinerary for you, and I'm putting everything together, I make sure that I have someone that I connect with in that country, and that every place that you go to, you're taken care of. And I'm always available to be connected to if my clients need it.
That's very smart that you're not limited to, trips to this region or this area. It's kind of wherever anyone wants to go. And then you use your magic to kind of make it that personal experience, no matter where that is. That's amazing.
Yeah, thank you. And when we go on a trip, we do offer, just like that, as we connected through this Patagonia trip. If you and a group of friends wanted to go on this Patagonia trip, that's when we would go, depending on the amount of people, six or more people, depending on the trip also. and the budget. But generally, we would go on the trip with you, and we just make sure everything is just going like smooth, because there's a million things that can happen on a trip, you know? And who do you have to, you have yourself to count on, or you have somebody that's, you know, that you can call, that you've booked your trip through. But that's, you know, again, people have to pay for personalization. And I think we just put it in there because I don't think that a lot of trips can be very successful. There's a lot of mishaps all the time. And I just want to reduce the amount of you know, hiccups, as there will be. There's hiccups on every single trip. I don't think that any one of us has taken a trip and not have had a hiccup, you know?
It's funny because I found you on Instagram because Andrew Tyree, I think, reposted you. He was one of the first guests that we had on the podcast. And we talked about this a bunch, that there's like, I experience this all the time because I go on press trips for work. But he said the same thing, that there always seems to be like one person on the trip who's like a pain in the ass, like was not, you know, is not like going with the flow. Like, do you feel like that happens even though you kind of vet the guests that come on trips with you? Is that still something that you experience?
I mean, there's always something, right? Generally the people that I work with now are just so awesome, so nice, you know, and I've had so many like repeat, you know, clients. So that's been really sweet. I try not to work with people that I feel like are going to be problematic. In fact, I say no, you know. I mean, the time and energy that I put into it, that, you know, people that I work with put into it, like nobody wants to deal with somebody who is, you know, like unpleasant, not even just unpleasant, but just rude. So it doesn't matter how much money somebody has. I can't, you know, and I'll say no. And I feel very good. I don't even care if my business is small or I have like, you know, 500 employees. I'm going to be like, I don't work with, you know, people who are not kind. And that's just like basic, you know? But yeah, there's always, I've had a few trips. I won't say a lot, but there's always somebody that's giving me extreme headache. Yeah. Especially with these open group trips, there's always a story, hands down. But some better, some more extreme than others. I will have to say that on my first open group trip, I learned so much, on that trip. And, it was the base of what I was going to do for all my future trips. It really like hammered some things in. But you know, meeting Andrew, so funny, because he was actually showing me an apartment, because we're looking at houses, we're showing us a house or whatever. And he had asked, you know, oh, you know, what do you do? And I was like, oh, I'm a travel, you know, I have a travel company. He goes, me too. And we just sat there and powwowed over the stresses of having our own travel company and just really wanting to share with people, and people just being so rude or people just being obnoxious on trips. Boy, we had a really good powwow.
You mentioned that you were doing open group trips for a while, and now you're doing more of like private group trips or individual private trips. How does this work? How are people finding you? Is it based on like referrals, friends of friends, social media?
You know, I've always been so shy. And so I hated to put myself, you know, I really dislike social media. I know it's such a powerful tool to be able to grow your business, but you know, I don't know. I feel that I think the atmosphere that surrounds social media is kind of heartbreaking, you know, especially in the realm of travel. Again, it's that whole thing of like, look at me, I'm at this place. And, you know, if I really want to create, if we really want to have a movement where basically we're honoring the inner journey, you know, as well as the outer journey. I mean, you know, you go to a place and it's about what happens inside of you. It's not really what you see, because if you cannot feel anything with your heart, then what is the point of anything that you're seeing? You know, if you're not connecting with it, or if you're not like truly there for it, then what's the point? And so in regards to social media, it's a wonderful tool. But I have found it to be very, you know, I don't want to perpetuate this idea of what things look like, you know, and how do you express in social media about how you feel about something. You know, it's a little bit more, it's complicated, you know, and it's personal, you know? And so we're working on ways of trying to tell the story without, and I'm trying to, you know, find ways to get over my shyness, in regards to sharing my story or sharing the travel that we do, at Guided Seeker. But yeah, so the, you know, people are just referring, just word of mouth. Gotten such amazing referrals from people, which is why I continue to have the same clients over and over again. And you know, I haven't been advertising. I believe that it's just good to go slow. I see a lot of companies, you know, they charged 10 times, you know, they do packages, for trips, which we do, like the open group trips are packages. And I have found the reason why we're not doing open group trips is because partly of not advertising and the way that, and the way that one would to have such an enormous amount of, like a pool of people that would want to go on certain trips. And also the type of work that we're doing, the amount of work that we do for Guided Seeker, and our trips, we can't really offer it to the wider public for a low cost. You know what I mean? You have like, you know, those Intrepid and Geo, you know, and it's just like schlepping and busing people and, you know, and those trips are inexpensive. But because of the way that we're dealing with our clients, we can't really, we don't really do it in that way. That's not how we want to operate. And so we want to make and keep things small. So the growing of what we're doing is we are adding more, curators, because the people that would go, I mean, I still have people that I work with, that, you know, we're ready for, we'll do group trips. But it's just on a private one. So it's like you and your friends. It's just easier. It's easier for us that way. And then later on, and we're getting ready to announce, probably this is the first time I'm talking about it with anyone beyond, you know, the inner crew, going to be announcing, trips, these month-long excursions, they're called pilgrimages. And, it's like intense, it's a pilgrimage, you know? So, yeah, they're intense long trips and super, super personalized, obviously. It's like things that you, it's like one-on-one, basically, it's like things that you fear and like how to get over it, or if like people that really want to change their life or really want to have a different perspective.
What destinations do you have in mind for those longer trips?
I mean, they're multi, locations. So, and it really depends on the client, you know, it's like what they're looking for, what they need, and, where we feel like, you know, it could, you know, those places that would really, move people, and certain places will move people and certain other places will not move people, you know? So, it just depends on the person. I mean, it could be like a Mongolia trip on horseback, or even like a very much like a camping, you know, not just camping, because Guided Seeker doesn't just do, extreme adventures. We just, it's a very, a good mix of, rugged, and also it's quality. We like to work with quality. So if we're in a dome, then it's like the best built dome with like amazing sheets, you know, for maybe 2 nights or 3 nights. And then we go like, we go camp it out, and we're having like a more raw experience. But yeah, you know, like, you know, going through Mongolia, going through Patagonia on horseback, right? Going through the jungle in the Amazon and working with the local indigenous people. It really depends. It won't be like France, you know, a trip through Paris, or maybe it will. I don't know.
The possibilities are endless. So hearing you talk about this, it sounds like you're a matchmaker in travel. So a matchmaker for experiences, and that the way, or the reason that anything is possible on these trips, is that you get to know the people who are traveling and what works for them, what kind of experiences they like, and maybe even push their buttons a little, like
button pushing, definitely. Yeah. Maybe like that. Maybe you like this.
I like that. That's good.
You have to squeeze or else you don't grow. You have to push, you have to squeeze or else you don't grow. It's just, it's the rule.
It sounds like your travel is also therapeutic in a lot of ways and you're meeting people where they are. But talk about the aspect of, you know, someone comes to you and they say, hey, I've been dealing with a lot of life issues of XYZ. I have anxiety or I need to be pushed in a certain way. How do you meet those needs through travel? That's so interesting to me of connecting those two. Obviously, I think a lot of people go into trips unintentionally thinking that I'll come back and I'll be better and things will get better or whatever. But you're starting it from that realm in the first place to say, okay, let's look at this. What do you want to get out of it? And how do I attack that from the very beginning? Talk about some of the things that you use to tap into that.
Well, I will say that I'm not a therapist. I'm not a therapist for many of people on a trip. I think, you know, it's just about asking the question, you know, and I think that people don't get asked questions like that too much. You know, when it comes to if someone has come to me and they're dealing with a bunch of different things, those are things to be aware of. You know, someone has a lot of anxiety or fear of something. And, you know, I'm not going to try to push them to deal with that. Everybody has to say yes to something. And I don't want to put somebody in a situation that they feel like they have to say yes in order to get over something. That's deep therapy. You know, I can't really provide that, but I can pose the question and it is incremental. Change doesn't happen overnight, but I think that when people can ask themselves that question, like, what do I want in life? I think that when they experience things, they're more apt to see what's right in front of them. And I'm just creating a container so that they can feel safe and they can sort of move from that container. They can push themselves a little bit. And I think that's what's really most important. There are going to be things that aren't beautiful, but you have to be able to see the beauty in that as well, because that it's just the reality of traveling. It's just the reality of a place. And that's why we ask people, hey, pose the question, like, what do you feel, you know, and what can you feel with your heart? Because then you're going to see differently with your eyes and you're going to have a different experience. I mean, there's an art to it, right? I know that I like to be, you know, adventurous, but I'm not going to do an entire trip adventure, you know? So we like to sort of like let people arrive, you know, think about the rhythm of like, I just came off the plane. I don't want to go do a tour right now. You know, I want to sleep and enjoy this beautiful pool and whatever. I mean, there's no judgment in having luxury, you know? But again, it is about meeting people where they are, listening, and having that person do some of their own inner search. I definitely think that's sort of how we like to operate. It's so weird because one of the things Andrew and I talked about is like on trips, like I've had some trips where I was like the mom figure, and people go through weird psychologies when they're on a trip, you know, depending on what kind of trip it is. You know, they'll think that they'll use me as a mother figure. They'll have somebody as a father figure. They're telling us their problems. I'm a doctor too, so.
The accidental therapist.
It's a lot, but I mean, it's not like I can't listen to someone, you know?
I have some location specific questions because I'm really interested in, you know, I did a little research on some of the trips that you've led in the past and some of the trips that you have coming up. So I know you've done Patagonia in the past. I've never been. It feels, even though it's not that far, it feels like foreign to me. So I would love to hear about, you know, what a trip to Patagonia with Guided Seeker would be like, where you stay, how you get there, who you encounter, like what you pack for these trips. Tell us all about it.
So packing for Patagonia, it depends on the season, because, you know, you're going to land and you're going to be in San Jose. We meet up in San Jose. We stay at some boutique hotels. We have amazing, delicious food and we sort of all settled in. You know, we meet, you know, we have an open, you know, like a welcome dinner that we do. We're drinking camarier, like we're drinking wine. It's sweet, you know, and it really just like the beginning of the trip is also just getting to know about Chilean history, Chilean art. You know, we always love to take the whole, you know, country and recognize it as a thing, you know, as a full moving force, and knowing the history of a place is really important. So, you know, again, you settle in, you stay in your boutique hotel. We have dinners. We go see some beautiful places. We do a hike to get us prepared. And then we fly to the south. We go to the south and we get picked up. And anyway, yeah, we get picked up and then we go to our lodge. And the lodge that we go to is quite amazing. It's the Eco Lodge in Patagonia. So we go to Torres del Paine, which is the national park there. And our lodge is in the middle of Torres del Paine. And you know, it's just a beautiful, it's kind of bohemian. It's very bohemian where we stay, but it's super nice. And depending on the room you have, like there's just a gorgeous view of the mountains and the snow, and it feels wild, you know, because there's sometimes pumas. I feel like the pumas have been very active and walking around, and there's like baby foxes and guanacos, and it's just cool. I mean, you know, the first couple of day hikes that you do, because we sort of get there and then we go, you know, we get there and we have our welcome dinner, and the next day we're off. And so, you know, we go, it's just like three, you know, 4 to 6 hour walks, treks. And then, you know, the other, basically, Eco Camp is our base, but two of the nights we're camping in tents. But it's just the most beautiful landscape you have ever seen. It's so pristine, it's so clean, it's just, I mean, so fresh. And the weather is insane. You know, you'll be like, I mean, if I went, you know, we had a thing in January. So the next trip was going to be in April. It's just like at the start of winter. And the weather has been weird everywhere. So, I mean, right now I'm telling my clients, like, there's just no way to know like what the weather is going to be like. But in Patagonia specifically, it's crazy. So in January, in the summer, it's super hot one moment. I'll be in my tank top, and then all of a sudden, it's the wind just comes in. I mean, the weather patterns there. There's no way to predict weather there. But it's just so gorgeous. It doesn't matter. And you know, yeah, I don't know. You're seeing glaciers one day. I mean, I don't know how much I can talk about Patagonia. I can go on and on. I feel like I shouldn't go too much in a wormhole because it's just endless. There's one hike in particular is when you see the towers. It's the last day of the hiking. Oh well, it's the last major day of the hiking. There's an option, you know, it depends on what's going on with the weather, whether we have like a relaxing animal tour, safari sort of hike the next day, or if we do it the day before. But yeah, it's a good 8, 9 hours. It's an intense hike. And
So
it's
you
just
have to be like physically prepared for this trip.
I'd say most people do, yeah,
Yeah.
for sure. You know, I don't know, I've had people ask me, they're like, "Oh, how did you prepare for Everest Base Camp?" And I was like, "Oh, I like did some hikes at Griffith, but like I didn't really prepare for that." So I do think that you just have to know yourself. You have to know yourself enough to be in good spirits about it, you know. Because you're packing, you're basically putting on all your layers. Maybe you have like a heavier puffer in your backpack. Luckily, you know, the lodge, they take our, if we're staying the night in Patagonia, if we're staying the night at a tent, they have Patagonian cowboy, a Chilean cowboy that brings our night bag to us,
Cool.
which is awesome. You're carrying your day bag. And this place is like very luxurious in the way of the food at the lodge is so incredible. And everything is made and prepared on property, except for the beers, of course. Like obviously that's not being made or prepared there. You know, the meals are excellent. And in the morning before your hike, you're having breakfast and then you're packing your own lunch, you know, like beautiful, like homemade fresh breads. And, you know, you're just, yeah, And so you just carry your lunch and your water supply for the day and your snacks. And that's all you have to carry, which makes things very light on the trek. So it is, you don't have to prepare to carry your 70-pound bag with you everywhere you go. You just have to carry yourself. And so that's how you would have to prepare for that. I definitely think you have to, I think you have to be confident about walking for hours. I would say prep, walking 3 hours at the least. Take a hike, do hikes.
Yeah, walk daily.
Walk daily and make sure you're doing stairs or something that's mountainous, because there are parts of the hike that you're sort of climbing down. I mean, this is, it's not like you're climbing up loose boulders or anything, but yeah, there's parts of the hike that you kind of feel like, dang, especially if it's raining, you want to be in shape for. So particularly good not to have any injuries.
Yeah. What would you say is a sweet spot for a trip to Patagonia in terms of length? A week, 10 days, 5 days?
So, I mean, things are pretty set. We do the W Trek, which is a circuit. There's different circuits that you can do depending on the group. If they want to do the O circuit, which is a lot longer of a circuit, it's more rugged. It's you're camping the whole time, and you get a you trek the majority of the park via the trails. The W Trek is sort of like a beautiful in between. We do the 7 day, well, it's like a 6 day hike, but we're at the eco camp for 8 days. So I try to take advantage because I am a private operator, and I'm, this is my itinerary. I get an extra day. I mean, again, people are just at bust in and bust out sort of thing there, because timing has to be perfect. But I was able to work, we're there 8 days, and the last day we can go to yoga. We can, get massages. We can just chill and just take it in without having to go back in the car for 4 hours to get to the airport. Actually 5 hours. It's a really long trek to get there. You're basically at the so close to the tip of South America, So, I'm just that's why the trip, my trips particularly are so expensive, is because we do spend time in Santiago, and we do spend time in when we go back in Valparaiso, like that area again, so we can experience the wine culture at the end of the trip, because why not? It's fun. But you're looking at anywhere from 6 to, well, with Guided Seeker, it's 8 days in Patagonia.
Yeah, I mean, I like that it's not rushed, because I feel like sometimes we take trips and because of, work restrictions or PTO and stuff like that, we're taking like a 6 day trip and we want to hit three different cities in that time, and then you don't really get to like immerse yourself in the culture. But it seems like 8 days is a good amount of time.
Yeah, 8 days for Patagonia, and then you're basically, we bookend the trip with 4 extra days. So
Got
we
it.
like to keep things like Guided Seeker around for more adventurous trips, anywhere from 13 to 14 days, just because we feel like that's an adequate way to represent the places that we're going to, without having to say, oh, you only did this one part, I guess you have to come back. I mean, generally, depending on the place, one would come back, but if you're going all the way to Chile, you might as well know something about Santiago and experience the wine culture, do some of that, and also spend a significant amount of time in Patagonia. It's not like you're going to go, you do that trip, it's almost like once in a lifetime. You feel like you don't have to go back again.
You've seen it all and done it all.
Okay, so first off, the reason why you heard that noise earlier, I was looking at your Instagram post for the Patagonia trip. And it talks about this sustainable geodesic hotel, which I had never heard of before. So I had to like do Google it. That looks amazing. It's so cool. I'm like never stayed in that, but what a cool little moment for this trip that you're talking about here. Just wanted to mention that. But that looks amazing. Is that one of your favorite parts of the trip?
I mean, that place is, I find it to be very sweet how it is the first hotel. This e basically how they reuse all of their energy and, their composting. It's sustainable. I really love the idea of sustainable tourism, and anytime that I can support a sustainable operation, a hotel. Yeah, of course we're going to do it. It's super comfortable and relaxed, and as long like the food is excellent. I mean, don't People, sometimes look at the dome and they're like, oh, it's not, I don't think it's luxurious enough. And I'm like, no, it's really sweet. And the food is excellent. And you're not really spending that much time there. You're sleeping there. And then the community spaces are like these massive domes, and you go in and it's like a little bar, and there's like little chairs and rugs. And it's super cool. It's really, yeah, it's a great place to be. And I love being there.
You have a couple other trips coming up this year. One is to Bali and one is to the south of France. I'm interested in hearing about both of those and what you have planned. And I see that they're both trips are full, so you have a wait list. Where do you cap them? Like, is it 10 people and then you send people to the wait list in case someone cancels, or how does that work?
So our trips are basically 8 to 12 people. And we definitely cap them at 12. I mean, sometimes we have put extra people on there. But just depends on what we think the chemistry of the group will be. We don't want to make it any bigger because a lot of the times we have these beautiful villas that we stay at, and it's definitely harder. Once you do start getting in the double digits of people, it's really hard to find a space big enough for all of us. So Bali and France are our mainstay group trips that we do. One is in the south of France, in a small town in Nerac. And Jay, who is one of our lead curators, was born in Nerac, and so his family is there, and all of his just all the amazing people that he knows there. And so this France trip is killer because basically it's just. It's all the local makers. We're talking like local cheese from the grandma, and we have a private chef that like makes all of our food, and we're drinking Armagnac, we're drinking cognac. I mean, there's this one amazing thing that we had last year. It was a truffle Armagnac, and it's so good, and it's one of the. It's a winner of, whatever, some sort of something, something. But yeah, it is amazing. And we hang with small brewers. We sleep in castles. So it's really like a laid back trip, and you're meeting the locals and you're just partying with them. We're going to markets. We're going to wine bars. We're enjoying picnics. Depending on what we decide to do, I mean, a lot of times we go to the Pyrenees. We do a hike there. So you see a bit of the south of France, in style and with great relaxation. It's time to read a book by the pool with a good drink, kind of thing, and homemade croissants and homemade butters. And
I love that. It sounds right up my alley. It sounds like an amazing trip.
yeah, and the Bali trip is again one of the first trips that we went on. We've changed it definitely since the first time that we were in Bali, but it's still about the same thing. This one is Nusa Penida, so it's Bali and Nusa Penida. So we've decided that the best what we've enjoyed putting together is again a little bit of everything. We go into sort of the Well, we go to the slow scene. I don't know. We're kind of feeling like which one we're going to do first, but we haven't quite decided. Either way, we go to Ubud, which is like very much like and like kind of getting into the rhythm of something and relaxing. So we sort of like to decompress in Ubud, do like sound meditation, go to the spas, get blessed by a local medicine person there. We eat Balinese food is amazing because it can be incredibly fresh. Nasi goreng isn't necessarily fresh, but it's so good, which is like sort of like a fried rice like mix with like an egg or like some skewers. But anyway, it's a lot of good food. It's a lot of visiting the temples. It's go to the monkey forest, do like normal Ubud stuff, go to the spas. And when you go in the temples, it's crazy because you really feel like the ancientness of everything, like you really feel the ancientness. And a lot of us were on scooters, so you're just feeling the wind at your hair, you're smelling the incense burning on the streets in the morning. Like it's just a fantasy. It's like a dream. And then we head off to Nusa Penida, which is like sort of like what a lot of people in Bali say, that this is like this is what Bali used to be. It's super low key there. It's a lot of rugged nature. And we just wanted to give people an idea of what it's like of just experiencing sort of the lushness, the beauty of the water and the sort of like hiking to these beaches that are actually aren't quite swimmable. Like there's so many like Instagram posts of like, oh yeah, I'm here on this beach. And I'm like, oh my God, you're going to drown. Like the currents are so intense there. And people are just going off taking photos and it's kind of, it's so funny. But anyway, and just, you know, allowing people to see the beauty of what that is and being a really, being the quiet nature. And then, you know, we hop back and we do a volcano hike because you got to, you know, at some point. So it's probably like an easier one, like the tour where, you know, just being up that high and watching the sunrise, it's just an incredible, it's an incredible thing. And it's an incredible accomplishment. You know, we try to make sure that there is some sort of physical activity that you do that that feels like you're just kind of having a smaller view, like, you know, you're having a grander view of the world and you kind of small, you know, get small a little bit so you can feel how infinite the world is. And then, you know, we party in Canggu at the end, you know, we wrap it up and we stay at nice, a nice place there and we go off in style. So, but yeah, it's a very special trip on our end. We have a Balinese mama that cooks for us. And really on all of our trips, it's like how we as curators, as trip leaders, we're introducing you to our international family. You know, we're introducing you to the people that we love and we care for and that we support, you know, their businesses and other places, you know, and we don't want to just bring anybody. So we often know too, that once you come and you meet, you know, our Balinese mama, which her name is actually Mama, like nobody knows what she's called, but they're like, Mama, you know, like that's what she's called. But I've had friends that, or people that have gone on trips who, you know, we've coincidentally end up being friends somehow. No, I was kidding. But then they go back and they go see Mama, you know, they go eat at Mama's house. And it's sweet, you know, it's really sweet that people have a place that they can go back to, you know, and part of the mission at Guided Seeker is to, it's to share, it's to teach people how to travel, you know, in a conscious way. I mean, there's, you know, we can argue that there's many a mission statement for Guided Seeker, but that's definitely a huge part of what we're doing is like really just sharing our knowledge of the world as we're just like holders of something. And I think it's good to share it with people who can really see it and who can use it in a beautiful way.
Do you have anything else that you wanted to add? I open the floor for you to add anything in case we missed asking something that you wanted to talk about.
You know, traveling is an exchange, you know, that you, if you go into travel with the idea that, you know, you're leaving a part of yourself behind, what part are you leaving behind? What part are you contributing to this place? Oftentimes people ask, you know, people are sort of moving in a way of like, what is this place going to do for me? How is this going to make my life better? And I think if we just change the narrative a little bit and say like, what can I give to this place? And how can I see this connection between me and the place that I'm at? I think that can really be a powerful way to change how we travel. You know, it's just posing, you know, it's just initiating a question to ourselves. And I think that if we can change the way that we travel, we change how things are operated. We change the system. And I think that we're all looking for ways for, we're looking for a way for the system to sort of hold us in a better space. But I think that nobody's going to change anything for us. We have to do it. We have to be mindful and do something for ourselves. And I think that we can really alter how the world sees us, you know, by having these connections, by just opening ourselves up in that way. And in that opening, you're going to receive so many amazing gifts from the places that you go to. People's heart will open up to you. Your heart will open up to them. And I mean, once you're changed in that way, and I'm not saying travel is the only way to do it, but it's worked for me. So I think that you will treat people differently. You'll treat yourself differently. The way that we view other people or see other people is no much more, they're not much more different from ourselves. And once we can see ourselves and other people, it's impossible to move in the world in the way that we have been moving in the world, which is, you know, sort of with the speed and the capitalistic sort of way. And here's the consciousness. Yeah. Anyway, thanks so much for having me on here. It's been a pleasure. I was really like quasi unprepared of really talking about anything. I was like, I don't know. Should I study?
Thank you. This was so educational and informative for us and really made me want to travel to some places that I have not been.
Yeah, you should definitely do. And if you need any help, I'm here for you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure meeting you.
Eat, Drink, Sleep, Repeat is a listener-supported podcast. Thanks for hanging out with us and following along. Please rate, review, and subscribe on Spotify or Apple. This will help new listeners to find us.